Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Terry James, the executive producer of the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. He will be talking to Tom Williams, and I know how long you've been waiting for this interview. Also, we have an audio review for you, and of course, Chicago's theater news. So, sit back and relax, and get ready to talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I have finally got our special guest today up at Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. I have the executive producer, Terry James. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot.
I've many times told people that I think Marriott is one of the top regional theaters in the United States, and certainly as good as any theater in Chicago.
Well, aren't you bright and well-informed?
I mean...
Yeah, I think I'm prejudiced, but I would tend to agree. We have great talent up here, great designers and directors, and obviously...
Well, first of all, let me congratulate you on Shenandoah. I thought it was absolutely a marvelous show.
Thank you. Yeah, we were very, very proud of it. That we had a lot of support with the original authors. And the director, David Bell, had, you know, some beautiful ideas for it. They were very willing to, let us take a stab at it. And we made a lot of trims in it, gave it a different feel, orchestrally in some place, so that there was more of a through line. But I think everyone would agree that the most effective thing we did was the casting of David Hess as
he was
as Charlie Anderson. Yep, yeah, he had a great take on it. It wasn't bombastic. It was a thoughtful performance.
One of the understudies in the show, who will remain nameless, who I know, told me he set the tone for that. With the first day of rehearsal, he came in. He was off book. He had everything down. Yep. He just set the bar so high. Everyone was just blown away by that.
Yeah, you know, and it's you always take a risk when you're hiring. When we hire anybody, but when you hire somebody from out of town that you don't know, based on maybe a couple of auditions, you're not sure of their work ethic or their work habits or now he certainly had a great reputation, so we had no doubt about his work ethic. But having never worked with them, we weren't quite sure what to expect. But it was a very unique process he had, different than any actor I'd ever seen. It was very slow. As it unraveled, just one step at a time. A lot of times the actor's process starts with 110%, they start over the top and then pull back and start bringing in the
consistency. So he worked slowly inside.
The opposite, yeah, exactly. Okay. And the cast loved it. It was one of those cases where it took to it day one.
And Shenandoah was one of those shows, he's the main character. It's the Jimmy Stewart character for
exactly.
Those that saw the film.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's he's on stage the entire time.
Well, congratulations on
Thank
that
you.
Show. It was I agree with Chris Jones. It was one of the finest shows that Marriott's ever done.
Thank you. We're
and
very
that says
proud
a lot because you guys, most of your shows are just absolutely world class.
Thank you.
Tell us now. I don't know anything about Married Alive, the show that's just opening. When this podcast, when people start hearing it, the show will have just opened.
Right.
So tell us what we can expect.
Well, you can expect humor because the original title was From Niagara to Viagra. So that right
was
away.
Was it really?
Right away.
Is this a new show?
Something. It's brand new. We did the original workshop. We've been working on it for about 2 years along with the authors, Sean Grennan and Leah Akimoto. And we did the workshop for about 400 subscribers about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And the response was incredible from the subscribers. They laughed through the whole thing. And this was just a reading where, the actors
and
were
these
singing.
Are real hip theatrical
exactly.
People that know what theater's
from,
about.
Right, from our subscriber pool. And so we decided, let's develop this and get it on the season. And they booked the show into Kansas City. And they did it and made some more changes down there and at the Heartland. And we went down and one of my artistic directors, Aaron Thielen, has been heading up the project from our end and working with the authors. And this is the definitive version. This is the version that will be sent out after this. But it's a lot of fun. Sean Grennan wrote actually one of our biggest hits, which was Phantom of the Country Palace.
That's right. I remember that was one of your world premieres. Yeah,
exactly. And it proved very popular. And he and his wife, who's actually in the show, Kathy Santon, who starred in a lot of Marriott shows up here, Peter Pan. And
oh, yeah. She's been around. She's a real pro.
Exactly. Yes. She got a leave of absence. She's on Broadway right now and to come and do this in kind of a homecoming. So
and you have someone else from Cats, too. I mean, from Wicked. I'm from Wicked.
Oh, who's that?
Gene.
Oh, Gene Wingett, of course.
Yeah, he just got off a year doing playing the Wizard.
Yep. And he was, it turned out, perfect timing. And it's great having Gene back. Of course, he and Kathy had teamed up on Goodbye Girl, you know, sometime back.
Yes, they did.
So we're having a lot of fun with it. We just started the preview process to
Wednesday
night.
Tell us a little bit of the storyline. It's older couples, or
there's four people in it. There's a younger couple and an older couple. In that, it follows them through the younger couple. It follows them from the wedding through 5-10 years of their marriage. And the older couple, it's picking them up around year 15 of their marriage into the start of Empty Nesters. So it's a lot of fun for everybody can relate. Absolutely,
yeah,
anybody can relate.
It does make it universal, yes.
Right, in some way. And it's just a terrific group of actors that have. And the show has developed from almost a feeling of vignettes to much more of a through line with these characters, as the authors realized that these issues are universal, and you can actually, one character can and will go through all these experiences in their marriage.
Well, that's terrific. And of course, it's a musical, because
that's what we do, right? Theater does
musicals. Yep. And but it's part of your guys' mission to not only do musicals, but make sure that the story comes through real strong, because I know that's one of the things that people say, that when they see shows here, it isn't all about fluff. It's the story comes through as one of the main characters.
It's really something you have to pay attention to when you have an arena theater that's as intimate as ours, that even though we have 900 seats, it doesn't really even feel like 900. It feels very, very intimate. And when you're in arena or in the round and the audience is that close, our furthest seat is as close as, say, the auditorium front row is.
Right, it's like
stage.
Eight rows.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
You're guaranteed a seat the first 8 rows. And but when you're that close, it better be honest storytelling. Whether it's fluff, whether it's high drama, it needs to be honest. And I think that's why there's a lot of shows. We've been able to get a lot of shows here first as they're launched into the regional market from Broadway, because it's a great venue to take a fresh look at a show and not worry about a large physical production, which we can't do anyway.
Well, the best example of that is what you did with Miss Saigon, which a lot of people think is the best thing Marriott Theater's ever done.
Thank you. Yeah, the funny thing was so many people referred to in their articles and discussions on Miss Saigon, saying that, for instance, that's one show that Marriott would never be able to do. Because
right, I remember people saying that. And then you went
with 12
trucks. That your challenge?
Well, at that point, we already had the rights to it, and so we kind of got a chuckle out of that. And then, of course, we realized, oh my gosh, what if they're right? What if we can't? And, of course, the first meeting was, well, what do we do with the helicopter? And the one question I was asked in interview after interview was, well, how do you do the helicopter? And I think that's an example of what we do well here because of the arena situation is, and the way we approach it is, well, we're not going to do the helicopter because we can't. We don't have that type of a theater. But what we can do is focus on, in that instance, the people left behind, which was based on that famous picture in Life magazine of the helicopter landing.
And you can see in their eyes the helicopter landing, and you had the sound. I don't know, you did something with the sound
system.
We had
subwoofers out in the house, and we had wind going. And what we capitalized on was the audience's imagination, which is always greater than anything you can realize
on
stage.
And that's the goal of theater, to really stimulate that.
So the audience could have sworn the helicopter was landing on top of the theater. You know, and that's how we did it. Actually, it was very simple, but very effective.
But I think you made the story come across a lot Because, you know, most productions of that show are overproduced. I think that was the tendency in, you know, in those $10 million Broadway production. But you guys,
right, that was
it
the era.
Sang beautiful and with lighting, which is the other thing you guys do. And by the way, let me say that one of the reasons you guys get regional rights is I think these big producers know that the quality that you guys do.
Thank you. Long before I even came here, the focus has always been on the actor, on casting. You know, casting is everything. You can have the most unbelievable set in the world, but if you don't have the actors to top it off, it's just not going to happen. And as I said before, especially in an intimate setting. And again, Saigon was an example of, it was actually a very small story. It was a story of basically five people. So it actually played very well in a small space. You know, Sweeney Todd played well in a small space. It was originally conceived as more of a chamber piece. But there's a lot of shows that, big mega musicals, we're looking towards Les Mis, for instance, next year.
Yeah, a lot of people are curious how you're going to do the big battle scene.
Yeah, so am I.
I have a feeling that the stage is going to be rotating.
The production meetings are very fun, believe me.
Yeah.
And we always start with, you know, no bad ideas, you know, don't worry about money, none of that. And then we go from there. But that's actually a story of a lot of people. It's very epic, obviously, but each story unfolds one at a time, and so I think it's going to.
I think it's
going to.
Yeah, I think it's going to work rather well.
And of course, it's a great score. And
oh yeah,
if a show's good, it's going to play.
Well, that's for sure. You're also doing The Producers coming up. That's the show after this.
Yeah, that is going to be fun. We're the first theater to do it. There's a lot of eyes on us to see how the audiences are going to react. Of course, it started in Chicago.
That's true.
And
yes,
when it began its pre-Broadway tryout here, there was a lot of controversy, as there always is with Mel Brooks, as far as the springtime for Hitler and the treatment of that in the show.
Well, he offends everybody in the show, right?
He's the Don Rickles of musical theater now, and who I just saw this morning on Regis.
Is he still around?
I love Don Rickles.
Yeah, I do too.
Which says a lot about me.
Yeah.
Now, that's comedy. But you know, it's one of those, if you really listen to what's being said, you know, it's not offensive. It's being held up for ridicule. But Mel Brooks says it very well in his interviews that, you know, it's basic, comes down to, you got to laugh or you're going to cry. We have to be able to laugh, not to forget. You know, we have to be able to laugh, not to, you know, to dismiss the lessons we've learned.
Plus, it's a style. It's done. It's done in a way that it doesn't take itself that serious. It's obvious that he's
absolutely
what he's doing,
and it's you know, and it's in the script.
Plus, it's an old time Broadway musical. It's structured like the old time shows, and that's one of the things I like about it.
Absolutely is. But it was controversial when the movie came out. And
oh, sure.
He won Academy Award for the writing of that. It's going everything. You know, the controversy is good. You know, that means it's making people think.
Plus, you're going to reimagine. I'm sure you guys are going to reimagine it. I'm interested in how you're going to do the Springtime for Hitler number.
It's. I can tell you again, the production meetings are very fun. When you have Mark Robin involved, you know it's going to be. It. You know it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, and it'll dance well.
It'll dance well, and it'll have great costumes.
Well, that's one of the other things that I give you credit for is you do use top directors. And I know you've used more than just Mark, but Mark and David Bell and Dominic Messini,
right.
Those are three of the best anywhere.
Absolutely. I mean, David Bell actually was director of the first show that I did here. Dominic Messini has been here that long. I mean, I'm very lucky in that I inherited a theater with a very mature staff, not in age, but as far as longevity. I have a stage manager that has been here for going on 30 years, and that's true of the entire staff, costume, designers, everything.
Yeah. And one of the things that is what you guys do with lighting. When you don't have the big sets, when you do the arena, so much you do with the lighting. Case in mind was Beauty and the Beast,
yeah,
what you did with that.
Well, and Beauty and the Beast was one of those where you needed, you know, sometimes we can, in the back of the house, or you through suggestion, you can give locales, but Beauty and the Beast, really, we had to have locales on stage, and of course we can't with arena have these big, you know, backdrop type sets. And Diane Ferry Williams, who's been our lighting designer again for
She's fabulous,
a long
yes,
time
yeah.
and 100 shows, sculpted the set really out of lighting. Arena is incredibly difficult. more so than any design department, because you obviously you don't have the luxury of, you know, having lights out over the audience shining on the stage and all this, because it's going to go right into the audience's face. So all of this has to be accomplished without going into the, you know, the front row of the audience.
Plus she has to light it for the staging, for the blocking, because you're playing the four sides.
Exactly.
So that just adds to it. I remember
it's an art form.
What you did with Sunset Boulevard. Everyone's trying to figure out how they're going to do the big car scene early, and then the staircase and all.
Right.
But what you did, I guess it was strips.
All the scrims
with video.
That came down. Yeah.
And no matter what angle you're at, you could see. I thought that was just genius.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
came up with that?
You know, I think, again, one of the strengths of this theater is you know, as corny as it sounds, is its teamwork. I think we have a unique situation compared to, you know, I know a lot of other theaters I've been a part of, that from day one, it's the entire team. We start with the whole production. Our first production meeting starts with the entire staff of stage managers, designers, basically anybody that wants to come. But what the first thing we do is latch on to, well, why do we want to do the show? You know, because you have to have something that you're passionate about, whether it's this because we love the score, because we love the challenge of the helicopter, because we love the challenge of casting. So we become enrolled in that. And then as we look at the show, we start with the problematic sections, and it's really through brainstorming. So I honestly couldn't tell you whose idea was the scrims, who had the idea for the helicopter.
Kudos to you for being the maestro that can orchestrate this.
It's very easy to sit back and just and take the credit for everybody.
I'm sure some of it's managing egos, too. I'm sure that's always part of it.
Well, we're all ex-actors here, so actually I think that's part of the team also. Almost everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody is.
But getting back to some of the regional premieres you guys have done through the years, Grand Hotel, The Goodbye Girl, of course, Cats. What Mark Robin did with Cats. I remember interviewing Mark and saying to him, how did you make it dance so well on that small stage?
On a 28-foot slab
of
cement.
And you know what he said? He stopped. He says, it's not the small stage. It's the space I have to work with. And I thought back and I go, darn, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I know part of it is not only is using people who are known quantities who know how to work the stage.
Right, to work arena. And Mark, you know, was one of our performers.
Yeah.
Mark had performed on this stage a lot. And
he got the old Evergreen Park, Drury
Lane,
is similar setup to you guys.
And he was and is. He's a great performer. Not to say just because you're a great dancer, you're going to be a great choreographer, or a great actor, you're going to be a great director, because that really would diminish Mark's unbelievable talents. You know, because not everybody that's a great singer can be a great music director
actors tell me Mark is the most organized guy they've ever run across.
To the point where, yes, I completely ridicule him in front of every cast as we start the process, when he comes in and hands us all our binders, including the producer, about what the show is.
With the note cards and
exactly.
everything, right? And the tape and everything, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I'll just see it press night.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's the way you juggle a career that's as busy as he is. And David Bell is another one where there's, you know, they've got a million things going on. They're directing here, they're directing there. You've got to be that organized.
Yeah, and also, since you guys go 52 weeks out of the year, there aren't too many theaters in America that do that. I mean, show ends, and was it 4 or 5 days later the next one starts?
Yeah, we close the show on Shenandoah, closed Sunday night, and we opened Married Alive on Wednesday night. When I first came here as an actor, we used to open with the Wednesday matinee even. It's a luxury having 72 hours. But, you know, that's the joy of being a corporate theater.
But you only have, 14 days of rehearsal? This is what?
Yeah, we rehearse 2 weeks, and we have a rehearsal space up the road that mimics the
But let's get back on it. 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
I know the little storefront theaters, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months of rehearsal.
That's why casting is everything. Absolutely.
And of course, being equity, having top professionals.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is a very unique process. It's another reason that we're lucky we have such longevity with our staff, because it really does frustrate a lot of directors that we've brought in for the first time, because they're not used to such a schedule. We don't close down as other theaters do for a week to do tech. And
so you have another place you actually do the rehearsal.
Exactly.
And how much tech time do you have, which means
one
in
day.
The theater? One day.
We close the show on Sunday. We change the set over on Monday. Tuesday, the actors come in for 1 8-hour rehearsal. They walk through the show, and then we open on Wednesday.
You know what's incredible about that? Anyone who's been to Marriott Theater, and most people around Chicago have at one time or another, they're flawless shows. I have never seen a mistake, and I've got that little bit of that director's eye. You know, if there's one guy a little off step, or if somebody misses a cue, or the light hits and the guy's, you know, 10 feet over, and I have not seen any of that in your shows. That is absolutely amazing.
Thank you. I mean, we have great subscribers, and of course, when we start the preview process, the first week, you know, our preview performances before we show it to the press, and the subscribers know they're coming to previews. They're very supportive, so we're really able to use that preview process.
Do you do talkbacks with them?
No, you know, we never have.
Okay,
first person that's ever even asked me that.
Oh, okay,
isn't that interesting?
Well, some theaters do, but you guys have moved beyond that, though.
It's a lot of times I'll go out and I talk to the audience before a preview performance, and I use them for, you know, picking shows and you know, a little. I have, you know, 800 people sitting there as a, you know, I use them as a marketing tool. And but you have to, if you're going to put yourself out there for questions, you have to be willing to be asked the tough ones. Like,
yeah, that's
my
true.
My gosh, you've gained a lot of weight. And that's usually what I get.
Well, that's a sign of a successful person. There's no doubt.
Or hungry.
But you guys have built Marriott up to just under 40,000 subscribers.
40,000 subscribers, yeah.
I've heard that is number one in any regional theater in America.
Any theater in the country, yeah. Isn't
and you've kind of cut it off, right? I mean, you have to keep so many for, like, exchanges and so forth,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Of course, we've been doing it a long time. We started subscription in 1982 is when we became actually one of the first theaters to even have a subscription. Kerry Walker was the producer.
He did a great job of building this, right?
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah. He and Diane Early, who was mm-hmm. the longtime artistic director, both good friends. I still hear from Kerry every week.
Does he come in to see the shows?
Once in a while, he does.
He lives in Texas, I understand.
Washington.
He's
from Texas.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. He's from Washington. He's got a little house over in Spain, overlooking the Mediterranean, which was always his dream. And so he's doing great. He's a character. And, of course, I was associate producer under him for 10 years after I
So you learned from one of the masters. Huh?
That's what he tells me.
Well, you've kept it going. But, I mean, 39,000, that's a dream for any theater group. So you kind of go into each year with the people behind you. And I can see that's a two-edged sword. One is they trust you because they wouldn't mm-hmm. be laying out their money to pay,
sure.
what, five shows season, correct?
Right, five shows season.
So they're paying, but you guys have the money in advance, so you have a nice budget.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a house of cards. If you guys don't produce great shows, I'm sure that could change, but so that the trust goes both ways.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is rarely ever do people ever ask, well, how did you get 40,000 subscribers, or how do you sell for, you know, 300,000 tickets a year or whatever. And it's the same for any theater. You do the way you do it is you give audiences what they want. Now there's all sorts of mission statements for different theaters. There's all sorts of niche audience segments, you know, that theaters go after. It's no secret we're a populist theater. We do musical theater. But I think we've targeted our audience, and there's a longevity and, as you said, a trust. And the trick is then to keep 40,000 subscribers.
Well, because you just don't retread the same musicals. I mean, you do classic musicals when you can rethink them. I mean, Pajama Game was terrific, West Side Story.
Right.
Oliver was one of the best things.
Wasn't it?
I remember Hetty Weiss's comment about Oliver. She said they just ought to get a wagon and just hook it up on the wagon and bring it downtown and would run for a year.
You know, and that's an issue of we sat down, we wanted to do Oliver. Oliver was actually the first professional show I was in when I was 10, so I always wanted to do it again. And they had done it here years and years and years ago. So we said, I said, I want to do Oliver. And so, I talked to David about it, and he's like, well, why? Why do we want to do Oliver? All of us have done it so many times. And we latched on to, but wouldn't it be great to do it as if it was the novel on stage? And
yeah, that really made it work. Yeah,
you know, and you've got people like Kate Fry and
Well, casting was the other thing, and I always give kudos to you guys for keeping great people working, even in what we might call minor roles. That, to me, that's loyalty. And
well, that's Chicago.
Yeah.
And you don't find that in any other place.
Right.
There's
no
egos.
I lived all over
the country. Absolutely.
In New York, I'm a leading man. I can't be a supporter.
Oh, yeah.
Here, they don't mind.
My roommate in New York was always, Terry, if you're not acting in New York, you're not acting. It's kind of like, yeah, well, you know what? I never had to have another job other than this business.
In the meantime, I've heard.
I didn't want to wait tables for 3 years.
Yeah, I've heard that the New York actors bust their rear end to get auditions here at Marriott, that this is one of the theaters they really want. You know,
a lot of them end up staying here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a transplant. I came here in 81 from New York and ended up staying eventually, you know, because I loved Chicago. But there's a different mentality here. We have, you know, I have.
It's really no stars here, right? I mean, one day you're the star, and the next day you're in the ensemble.
You know, one of our understudies for Married Alive is Heidi Kettering, because, you know, she did the workshop for us.
Is that right?
And, you know, she wasn't available for the production. We have a wonderful girl that we brought in from New York, and Kelly Sullivan, who's really going to be a treat for everyone to see. But then, you know, they changed their schedule, and Heidi wanted to be a part of the production. So here's Heidi Kettering sitting there as an understudy who blew everybody away in Funny Girl. You know, she's going to star in Little Women for us at the end of the season.
Oh, great.
But, you know, Aline Robertson will do Gypsy, and then she'll turn around and, you know, do
all of
cameo.
Like you said, Greg Winkler and Robbie Lehman.
Absolutely.
All of our top people.
Absolutely. Bernie Yvonne, Matt Raftery. I mean, we've had people here for years and years and years. And I think that's what I'm probably most proud about, is that we have so many Chicago actors that have earned a living in one of the hardest businesses in the world by doing what they want to do.
Well, Paula Scarfano and John Rieger have told me that that's the case, and they work a lot here. If you put your ego aside and you're cooperative and you're willing to, you know, do whatever it takes to get a show going, you build that reputation, then you can work your
way. Because you don't do it to get rich. I mean, if you put this much energy almost into any other job, you'd make a lot more money. You know, and we've all been friends for, you know, Aline Robertson's my best friend. Bernie Yvonne, 20 plus years. Paula Scarfano, 25 years. Mark Robin. We've all grew up together. And I think what I'm most proud of is we're all still in the business in one way or, you know, one way or the other.
And still producing top quality, you know, productions. I'm sure there's a trust factor there, and you can complete some of their sentences that they might start, right?
Exactly. It's trust, and you know that they're doing it for the right reason, and the audience picks up on that. You know, why else would you stay in the business for 25 years unless you absolutely had to perform, and if it wasn't your passion? You know, it's something that you're just
it
more
comes
than
across
to.
That in shows. I have seen some of your shows. You know, I always come to opening nights, but I've also come back to your shows later on. From, you know, there's always someone who I can get a ticket from 5 or 6 or 10 weeks into the show, and it's always even better, a little sharper.
Yeah,
I mean, it does not. Your shows never get stale.
Yeah. You know, because it is such a fast process. They continue to grow and find new things.
But just what a workout the actors get. I mean, with the arena stage, they're on the dead run coming in and out of all the scene changes.
Yeah, I tell you, up and down the aisles and around and eight times a week. It is a workout.
And the audience reaction to your shows is usually very, very strong, too.
Yeah, again, you know, having that many subscribers, which is, you know, it's about half of our business is, you know, we start off with half the tickets already sold, as you said, which is a great feeling. But when you have people that really are enrolled in the theater, and because they're subscribers, they have this loyalty and they feel that they're a part of the process, and they know that any given show isn't going to appeal to somebody. Usually it's about, in my mind, I always look at it as 10%, 10 to 20%. If you get over 20%, then you know you have trouble with the show. But because we do classics and new works and seldom seen and reworked and all of that, you know, you try to run the gamut within the musical theater genre, within the populist musical theater genre, as we put together next season. And, you know, it's what we're going through
Well,
tell
us, what you have coming up. I know you have The Producers and then Little Women finish out the season.
Right, and then Les Mis kicks off.
Well, you know, I'm that's one of my all-time favorite shows. I can't wait till you guys do it.
Yeah. We haven't announced next season, but I will tell you we have a very exciting new work coming up.
Okay.
That we've been working on with David Bell, that is based on a Horatio Alger novel with the unknown music, lesser known music of George Cohan.
Wow, because I'm a big fan of George Cohan.
Well, and if you loved Oliver, you're going to love this, and it's called The Bowery Boys, and we're really excited about it. We've done a couple of readings with actors, and we're going to do a workshop this spring.
And David Bell's directing?
David Bell's going to direct, yep. Okay. Matt Raftery's is choreographing with him. And
Boy, that sounds exciting. Yeah. Well, a couple of shows that I'm wondering about, if you've ever considered, Irma LaDouche.
It's a great show. It's a great show. We've never done it. That actually would be
Tree Grows in Brooklyn with a little change of an ending.
Have you been talking to Paula Scrofano? Because she's always pushing that.
But Paul and I agree on that one. Yeah, it's such a great score.
It is,
and
it's a great story.
And it would dance well.
Yeah.
It would dance well. Somebody like Mark directing would really make that show.
Yeah.
Have you considered that?
Yeah, actually we have. And, you know, again, it's always putting together the puzzle. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shows. I'm going to go to Ravinia this summer to see what is my favorite
Most
musical.
Happy Fellow.
The Most Happy
Fellow.
Yeah,
I'm going to see that too.
Which we've never done here. It's a gargantuan show.
Last time it was done, if I remember, Light Opera did it.
Yep.
About 10, 12 years ago.
And Drury Lane Oakbrook has done it.
Have they? Okay. But that's more of an operatic, but it's a big score.
I do too. Love it.
Lester was such a great talent.
I got to do it with Alan Gilbert.
You were in that show. Okay.
As Joey a long, long, long time ago. But I love the score, and I think we could do it well in that there's like something like 11 major roles in it.
Yeah.
Something for everybody, but it's just trying to figure out how to fit it.
Well, in the interest of time, I always like to get your background. Besides being the executive director here, and I know you have a strong musical background, but you have an actor background. I remember seeing you in Fiddler in 1982.
Oh, going way back to gas lamps, practically.
give us some of your background.
You must have been here on a little school trip.
No. I've been coming to Marriott for a lot of years. It's always been great.
Well, actually, I started as a child actor. And I just got back from California from a regional theater that I started in when I was 10 that are celebrating their 40th anniversary. And I went back almost all 40 years. I went back 38 years with this theater. But always done musicals. I did about 100 of them or so around the country. And, you know, in those years, Marriott always went into New York every year and did auditions. And just as a fluke, you know, I auditioned and was brought out to do Fiddler on the Roof and Kismet, which were, you know, back-to-back shows. I went back to New York after those two shows. Every couple of years I'd come and do something because I had such a great time here. And literally, eventually I just stayed because I ended up with so many friendships here. I loved the standard of living here and just the whole Chicago community. And I had been doing it for a long time at that point. And I wanted to do other things. And you're afforded that in Chicago.
Yes, you are.
I had a performing arts studio downtown, and then I became the music director here at Marriott for 10 years, and then the associate producer when I stopped performing. But, you know, and it was really, a week before I stopped performing, if someone said, would you ever give up performing, I'd say, you're nuts.
Yeah,
but it was just one of those things.
That's my question. Would you go back on stage?
No.
You've retired?
I sang in San Francisco a couple days ago, last week, and I thought, oh, my gosh, warming up. You're making sure I look all right. I get through it?
What's good? Of course, you have understudies, but I was going to say, if something happened and you had to grab the book and go out there, have you ever had to do that?
The most ridiculous thing happened here with Robbie Lehman, who's one of our stars of producers coming up. We were doing Ross Lehman. He goes by. We were doing Hot Mikado a couple years ago.
Fabulous in that.
Mother's Day, right at the top of the run. No understudy was ready yet. We had just barely opened, and we literally were sold out, and all I could see were boutonnieres. I just happened to be in the office doing some work. It was a weekend, and I was in dungarees and a sweatshirt. The stage manager called down and said, Robbie just collapsed, and this is like 10 minutes
And here's a guy with unlimited energy.
Yeah. So I go running upstairs, and you know, he wasn't sure what it was, but he was violently ill, could not get off the floor, and obviously couldn't do the show. And when they had called for an ambulance, and an usher comes in and says, I'm closing the lobby doors. And I said, don't you dare. Leave the lobby doors open. I want them to see Robbie rolled out on the gurney so that they know we're not lying when we go out and say the lead is sick. And obviously, by that point, we knew he was all right, but it was like a food poisoning type thing. But there we were with a sold-out house. So I don't know how I was talked into it, but I went out, I explained it, and I said, the cast is all dressed, so we're going to do the show anyway without the lead. I'm going to come out and narrate. I'm going to tell you what's going on. We're going to do all the production numbers. Well, for the next 2 hours, I made an absolute fool of myself running out and saying, now, if Robbie was here, you'd see him in this like brown pinstripe suit, and he'd be running around saying this and saying that, and then enters. It ended up just a blast. And then afterwards, of course, I think, what the heck did I just do?
I heard, by the way, I wasn't there, but I did hear that you were terrific.
It was fun.
Yeah, that people said it was, because they knew what, you know, what was going on.
It was
fun. The honesty of it, but the old acting instincts came out.
I'm not sure what kind of instinct
How many refunds did you give?
You know, we didn't give any.
Is that right?
We didn't give any. That was a nice, generous audience. Because I had offered, obviously, at the beginning.
Yeah, sure you have.
Said, we're going to give it a shot. Obviously, I'll give you your money back if you want, but everybody stayed, and we just had a great time. I'd never do it again. But,
well,
and
don't say
sure,
never.
I made sure understudies were ready much earlier.
Oh, okay.
After that.
But that's a terrific story.
That's just
an example of the show goes on. So that won't be your last performance.
I don't know.
Somebody will talk you into something. Well,
maybe I'll do something with
Give
Mark
us a
Robin.
Little. We're just about out of time here. Your shows run. This is up in Lincolnshire in Marriott Theater. Mm-hmm. Right on the internet.
Yep.
What days do you run?
Wednesday through Sunday. We have matinees on Wednesday and Sunday, and two shows on Saturday, and the others are all evening.
Is there a number that they can call?
Sure. The box office number is 847-634-0200.
So you very much suggest that they call ahead and get reservations.
That would be great, right? Just to check the availability of when you would like to
come. How often are there tickets available for walk-ups?
The weekends, you know, are tougher. Again, because of having 40,000 subscribers, a lot of shows go quickly, especially in the beginning of, you know, of runs. And we don't advertise in the paper that much. So
you don't really need to when you have that base. Isn't that a good position to be in?
Yeah, from your mouth to God's ears.
Okay.
So, once more, give
them the number.
847-634-0200.
Well, you got to be proud of the work you've done. And
thanks,
and
Tom.
I'm so excited about the new show coming up in the season. It's
Let
always
me know what you think.
I will, yeah. It's always a treat. You know, I think you're the only theater that I have never not recommended a show. And I think almost every show is a highly recommended. And it's not that I'll call it, you know, if I didn't like it, I'll say so. It's the quality that you guys do. You know, they say musical theater is in the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
And you guys get that right.
Well, we got a lot of the devils here, and I'll pass on your compliments to all of them.
Well, they do great work, and keep up the good work, and listen to Paula. Look into Tree Girls in Brooklyn. I think that would be a major treat.
Yeah, I shall do that.
Thank you.
Thanks,
and folks, thanks for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another equiangular episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of July 9th, 2007. Ron Hocking has announced that his new show at Chicago's Mercury Theater, The Men and Their Music, will be extending by popular demand. That's right. Following a brief two-week hiatus, the play will open back up for an extended run on August 2nd and will be running through September 9th. Ron Hocking, who has been dubbed Chicago's Entertainer, has performed at New York's Carnegie Hall and with the Philly Pops Orchestra. The Men and Their Music follows on the heels of his last success, His Way, a tribute to the man and his music. The show was an homage to the late Frank Sinatra and ran for nearly a year at the Mercury Theater. Well, Ron Hocking's newest show is filled with many numbers from many of the great male vocalists of all time, including Bobby Darin, Billy Joel, Ray Charles, and Frankie Valli, amongst others. For more information, you can always log on to www.ronhocking.com, or, of course, you can go to my personal favorite website, theaterinchicago.com. Comedy Sports is celebrating their 20th anniversary here in Chicago. Yes, Comedy Sports, and that is sports with a Z, is celebrating 20 years of making Chicago audiences laugh. The contest and festivities will kick off on this July 13th. The 20th anniversary night will be on July 21st, and it is a special night of 80s-themed shows. Throughout the month of August, Comedy Sports will be having themed weekends, which will include challenges to other Chicago comedy theaters, such as Second City and I.O. Also in August, Comedy Sports will be hosting a special alumni show, so make sure you catch that. All of this comes right before their September 14th grand opening of their new theater. That's right, the theater is going to be located at 929 West Belmont Avenue. Right there by the L stop and above a restaurant you may be familiar with. You can find out more information on the 20th anniversary of Comedy Sports by clicking on over to ComedySportsChicago.com. And remember, that's sports with a Z. Or you can always stay tuned right here to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News Podcast. There is a new place for theater fans to gather after a popular show, and that is in an alley which all of us may be familiar with. Couch Place, the recently restored alley that leads from State Street to Dearborn, is the alley that is right next to the Oriental Theater, the Goodman Theater, and the Chicago Theater on State. The alley has been cleaned up and made to look fresh by the Chicago Loop Alliance, and who has named the alley after James M. Niederlander, who, as we all know, is closely tied to Broadway in Chicago. The alley will be the place for the enthusiastic fan to catch an autograph of their favorite stars as they head from the stage to their nightly bar. Couch Place will have exhibits coming very soon in the future, which will be of theatrical sets, costumes, and vintage posters. It will be a safe place, not only fun to hang out in, but fun to take pictures of as well. If you haven't yet, get on down to Couch Place and check out a Chicago theater alley. Well, thank you very much for listening to this Equiangular episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from The Merchant of Venice, Act 2, Scene 7. Men that hazard all do it in hope of fair advantages. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to our little podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater is happening. Don't you miss it.
You're listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast, An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde, directed by Jim Schneider at Circle Theater in Forest Park, Illinois. Review by Tom Williams. Director Jim Schneider and Circle Theater have a marvelous knack for mounting terrific classic drawing room comedies of manners. Featuring wonderfully vivid, period-perfect costumes upon Bob Knuth's innovative, opulent-looking, gold-trimmed drawing room set, featuring red and gold velvet walls, large doors, and classic Victorian furniture, this show magically whirls us into a rich green and gold drawing room with oriental theme, complete with paintings and jade vases. This production reminds one of a Court Theater or a Goodman Theater high-budget production. The creative production team at Circle Theater knows how to stretch their modest budget to deliver the look and atmosphere worthy of an Oscar Wilde play. An Ideal Husband is Oscar Wilde's initial hit play, first produced in London in 1895. It's a much overlooked work, being overshadowed by Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, which opened only a month after Ideal Husband. It is a serious comedy dealing with political intrigue, blackmail, and featuring a suspenseful plot utilizing secrets, a letter, and a brooch to deliver comedy, witticism, and comments on the rules of civilized Victorian British society. Wilde has so many one-liners and euphemisms in his stylized dialogue that one has to listen closely to gather them all in. Schneider's talented cast is deft in articulating Wilde's biting and whimsical and often sardonic language. The play moves from the melodramatic to the comic as the scandal has the perfect politician, Sir Robert Chiltern, played by Jonathan Nichols, in danger of losing his position in the government and his social status when Mrs. Cheveley, played by Sarah Knopf Snyder, blackmails him with a letter he sent years ago in his youth, allowing him and an associate to profit from inside information about the building of the Suez Canal. Sir Robert turns to his friend, the dandy social butterfly Lord Goring, the brilliantly droll Bradford R. Lund, for advice and help. Goring adroitly offers many of Wilde's biting and most unflattering comments on men, women, fashion, society, literature, and government. These one-liners spice the work nicely, as Wilde's clever plot renders how Victorian society looks at the way a man and woman differ in how they love. Women passionately idealize their men, while men hide their human weaknesses from their women, according to Wilde. In a series of funny plot twists, Lord Goring, Wilde's alter ego, maneuvers with apt guile, saving his friend and landing a wife as this smart play unfolds. These hilarious scenes are played to the hilt. Terrific work from Bradford R. Lund as Goring, as aided by Sarah Knopf Snyder as Mrs. Cheverly. Jonathan Nichols, Sir Robert, and Danita Lennertz's Gertrude Chiltern. The ensemble sported fine English accents and the glib drollness necessary in an Oscar Wilde play. The production values of the set design and costumes added authenticity to this stellar production. An Ideal Husband is one of the finest comedies Circle Theater has mounted to date. Circle Theater proves that non-equity theater companies can deliver lavish and intelligent productions of classic works. This show is a major achievement. I give it a highly recommended rating. An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde, directed by Jim Schneider, now playing at Circle Theater, located at 7300 West Madison in Forest Park, Illinois. Running time is 2 hours and 40 minutes with intermission, now through August the 5th. For tickets and more information, please call 708-771-0700.
Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Terry James for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.